interesting physical system that emerged in the last couple of years. There's a bunch of papers on the subject, and since this is a short talk, I'm not going to refer to them, but I refer you to the references of my paper. There's a bunch of paper by Kutasov and Nakayami and collaborators, and I'm just going to concentrate more or less on the aspects of the hairpin brains that are interesting for us, namely the portion of the hairpin brains that's going to be behind the horizon, as we're going to see later. Okay, so this is the outline of what would have been a one-hour talk, so I don't have any illusions of actually finishing all of that, but maybe it serves a purpose. If one of you has a question, then they can come to me later. So the context of this physical system is two-dimensional strings, or linear dilaton backgrounds, more generally. And one thing that is interesting about those systems is that they may shed some light on the holographic description or the matrix description of these systems. So I'm going to talk a little bit about those subjects. Then the other interesting thing about those two-dimensional strings is that they have black hole solutions. Those black holes, Euclidean or Lorentzian, are exact in some sense that I'm going to elaborate on later. And one of the goals of this work is to look for a holographic description of those systems. Okay? And as I'm going to elaborate, and it's very well known, when you look for holographic description, part of the knowledge that you want to have is how the brains in that system behave. Okay? So then I'm going to talk about deep brains in this system. One of the things that are interesting in that is that you can say exact things about that system. I'm not sure I'm going to talk much about those trajectories, smearing, and radiation. Those are the basic features of those deep brains. I'm going to be more interested in the deep brain in the Lorentzian black hole, which are obtained, as usual, by some process of analytic continuation. And this process is subtle, and it has many surprises. And one of the surprises here is what specifically the world volume theory of these deep brains look like. OK, and the conclusion will be towards holographic description of the two-dimensional Lorentzian black hole. OK. So as I mentioned, this is a part of a bigger subject, which is two-dimensional strings, or more general than that even, the linear dilaton background. So what one is interested in is background, which are asymptotically of the form written. The metric is flat, which is interesting by itself. It's flat in the string frame. The reason there is a difference is that the dilaton, which is also the string coupling, it depends on one of the coordinates of space. I take that to be a space-like linear dilaton. And therefore, the string coupling depends on single direction, and time and translation invariance is broken. Okay? So those are specific forms of backgrounds. The simplest one is the background, which is just two-dimensional flat metric with the linear dilaton with the specific coefficient. This coefficient, Q equal 2, gives you a critical string background, so you don't need to add any additional part to your conformal field theory. Now, the drawback of that is that the string coupling, which is e to the phi in my notations, is changes with space. So there are parts of space where the string coupling is large, and you cannot trust your perturbation theory. And the standard way of dealing with that is to add the so-called reveal wall. This is a detail that I'm not going to get into. And this two-dimensional system, which is very well investigated, it's just one simple case of a whole interesting set of theories that arise in the near horizon limit of Navier-Schwarz 5 brain. So we are kind of used to near horizon limit of D brains, which give you the famous ADS-EFT. And this is just a different set of theories, which is equally interesting and maybe not as well investigated. And the holographic description complements the ADS-CFT in some sense. There are features that are similar, there are features that are very different. Okay. So once again, those theories are nice because they have holographic duals, so they have in some sense, exact non-perturbative definition. And exactly like the ADS-CFT. And the holographic dual is usually a non-gravitational boundary theory, and which encodes holographically the bulk theory, which has gravity. Okay. So the most general form of the duals, the boundary theory, the thing that would be the CFT in the ADS-CFT, are little string theories, which are which I'm not going to review here. But the simplest case, the case of the Liouville two-dimensional theory that I mentioned before, the holographic dual is fairly simple. It's written in this action. The action has a single matrix, which is a Hermitian matrix, and you take the large n model. You take a particular scaling limit in which the details of the potential don't matter. You basically focus on a local maximum. And in this limit, this matrix model is the boundary theory. It should be thought of as the boundary theory dual to the gravitational two-dimensional theory. Okay. So this was known in the early 90s. The new thing that happened recently, the last couple of years, is that this kind of duality between the matrix model and the Liouville theory could be understood exactly like the ADS-CFT. So the ADS-CFT is, in some sense, two different ways of looking at the physics of the D3 brain. One of them, the ADS space, is the new horizon limit of the deep brain. And the other one is the CFT, is the open string description, is the intrinsic world volume theory of those deep brains. So in some sense, this could be thought of exactly the same way. The matrix model is the theory of the open strings on a certain kind of deep brains. And the linear dilaton, or the Liouville theory, should be thought of in some sense as the new horizon limit, and this is just another example. Now, if you wonder where are the d-brains in this abstract-looking matrix model, roughly they correspond to the eigenvalues of the matrices, which are the true degrees of freedom here. But more generally, the point I want to make here in this slide is that the theory on the world volume of d-brains provide a holographic description of the string background. So this is not an algorithmic way. In some sense, there's no way of deriving what is the holographic description. But generally, the lesson is that if you want to know what the holographic description of a particular string background is, you better look at the d-brains in that background. And that's at least the first educated guess that you can make. Okay. Now, this is a theory of quantum gravity. This is a string theory. It's a two-dimensional theory, so in some sense, it's not as interesting as the higher dimensional ones. It doesn't have any propagating gravitons, but it does have a long-range Newtonian potential, and it does have black hole solutions, okay? So the black hole is written by this metric. I'm not sure you can see this little red dot. Okay, the black hole is given by this exact metric. This is a solution of two-dimensional dilaton gravity. And it has one parameter k, which is roughly the scale of the geometry. So large k corresponds to the gravity limit in which the geometry is very large. Curvatures are very low. But the nice things about this is that 1 over k corrections, which is stringy corrections, are completely under control. This is an exact conformal field theory, so you know how to calculate whatever you want. And the Euclidean black hole also has a matrix model. It corresponds to a known deformation of the matrix model studied by Kazakov, Kutasov, and Kostov. So the Euclidean black hole, in some sense, is under good control. You know what the space-time picture is, and you know how to describe it non-perturbatively. However, the holographic dual for the Lorentzian black hole is unknown, okay? And in some sense, a lot of the things that we want to know about black hole physics need the Lorentzian black hole. There is some evidence that at least in the two-dimensional case, the black holes don't form when you want them to form, for example, in high-energy collisions. And there is a suggestion that the black hole may be related in the matrix model to a state that has a lot of particle hole excitations, okay? So this is all motivating me to look at the deep brains in this particular Lorentzian black hole background, at least as a first step towards guessing, basically, what would the holographic dual be. Also, besides that, there's also an interesting time dependence in this system. As we will see, those are accelerating brains. There was a lot of literature in the last 5 years about time-dependent open-stream backgrounds, tachyon condensation, etc. And in some sense, this is another system which shares some features with those tachyon condensation models, but some features are different. So this brings me to the actual hairpin brains. So the name hairpin brains was given by the Zamolodchikov brother because of the Euclidean shape of the hairpin brain. It goes towards the tip of the Euclidean black hole and comes back from the other side, forming presumably what's a hairpin. When you do an analytic rotation, analytic continuation of this trajectory, you get a Lorentzian black hole with this Penrose diagram. It's an eternal black hole, so it has two asymptotic regions. And it's asymptotically flat, so we see this diamond structure. And in red, there is the trajectory of that brain. Okay, so it's an accelerating brain. It's coming out of the, well, this is the time symmetric situation in which it's coming out of the horizon and falling back. The trajectory is known exactly. It's given by this parametric equation. And it's accelerating trajectory. Now, there is a force on these D brains. If you just think about it as a D particle, it has a mass which is proportional to 1 over the string coupling. And all those backgrounds, the string coupling depends on space. And therefore, there is an effective force. The D brains want to be at the region where the string coupling is large. Okay, so it's feeling some force, and it's infalling towards the horizon. The acceleration is determined completely by this parameter Q, which has to do with the slope of the dilaton, how fast the string coupling changes as a function of position. And in particular, it's not a tunable parameter. It's just a parameter given by the background. And due to this constant acceleration, in addition to the black hole horizon, there's also a Ringler horizon, which I drew here by this on this diagram. So this is the system. And the nice thing about this system, in analogy to the Euclidean black hole, is that the boundary state, the thing that tells you everything about the D brains in string theory, is exactly known. It's not just the trajectory, which is the first geometrical approximation. All the string information is known as well. And in particular, it's fairly simple, as we will see. So let me just flash the formula. You don't need to know any details there. It's not surprising to see ratios and product of gamma functions there. But the boundary state is written in terms of those coefficients. Those coefficients basically give you what is the source for each and every one of the closed string modes in this background. So there is infinitely many modes in string theory. And each one of them is sourced in a particular way by this object. So in particular, if you want to know the shape of it, I drew this hairpin shape, or the hyperbolic shape in the Lorentzian case. You look at all the coefficients of the graviton at any momentum. And you see what is the shape of the brain as probed by those gravitons. But this boundary state has many more coefficients and much more information than that. Okay. So in particular, one point that I want to emphasize, so the boundary state includes information about the total mass of the D brains. When you probe it, for example, in very low momentum gravitons, and therefore it has some sort of positivity properties. The mass of an object in a gravitational theory should be positive, and it obeys some sort of positivity properties. We will see that when we do analytic continuation of this object, these positivity properties are very hard to keep. And in some sense, this is what you expect. Okay? So this is one of the points that I'll make later. So those are nice things. I just flashed the formula to that contains all the information about those brands in string theory, the source for all the string modes. So one of the things that happens there is that this deep brain is really secretly very simple. So the only way that string theory modifies the trajectory is by smearing it with this particular weight function, which is written there. And this weight function should be thought about as some sort of stringy halo that extends around the D-brain. So the D-brain gets a little bit fuzzy by having some sort of open string excitation attached to it. And those open string excitation kind of extend away from the brain. And that extension is actually not just stringy scale. It depends on this parameter Q. And it actually becomes infinite at some critical point in Q. Okay, but in some sense, once you know the trajectory, there is a simple way of knowing all the other information. Okay, there's a closed ring rotation. I'll skip over that. So I come to the analytic continuation, and that's a central point. So usually in string theory or even in field theory, you define things by working in Euclidean space where things presumably or many times are more convergent, and then you'll do some sort of analytic continuation to get the Lorentzian quantities, which are the well-defined ones, the ones that are measurable. Okay, and generally, when you do that, there is some sort of ambiguities that, in the case of quantum field theory in curved space, are very well known. They're related, for example, for vacuum selections. Okay, and the point here is that the boundary state, the trajectory of the D-brain, and all the string correction is a new object. And it's defined only in Euclidean space. And in order to define it in Lorentzian space, you have to analytically continue as well. And this will present some sort of new ambiguities. Okay, there are many, many ways in which you can extend the Euclidean boundary state to Lorentzian signature. Okay, but because this boundary state is almost geometrical, it's basically a smeared trajectory. There is a way in which you can, there are many prescriptions, of course, but there is one which is sensible one, which we call the transparent horizon. Basically, we say that the trajectory continues through the horizon if the horizon is almost flat without being deformed much. Okay? It's a little bit analogous to the Hartle-Hawking state in which nothing special happens at the horizon because the horizon is more or less flat. Okay? So you do this. You could do that because, again, you can use the known trajectory and the known smearing function. And this is the Lorentzian boundary state that you get. Again, the form is not particularly important. And the point is that the positivity properties of the boundary state, the thing that ensures that it has locally positive mass, get lost in that. And in fact, this is something that you expect to be completely generic. Because when you do the process of analytic continuation, any sort of positivity properties will be lost. Okay. In fact, in this particular prescription, the part of the boundary state that's behind the horizon is related very simply to the part of the boundary state which is in front of the horizon. It's just related by a sign flip. So if you have any sort of positivity properties of in front of the horizon, you're going to get something completely negative for the other part. And that means that the world volume theory of that D-brain, the world volume theory that describes the excitation of these D-brains, has some sort of fields that are unconventional, they're ghost-like. Its excitation will have the opposite sign in the kinetic energy, if they're bosonic, or they're going to have the wrong spin statistics relation. Okay? And this is more or less inevitable. We find a particularly simple relation in our prescription, but I think any other prescription that you'll come up with, it would be very hard to maintain those positivity properties. Okay, so this is more or less the end. So let me just conclude with the interpretation of this strange fact. So this is goes back to the work of Werner Israel and Maldacena more recently, and they discussed the fact that eternal black holes, like I drew before, this is the eternal ADS black holes, have two asymptotic boundaries. And one of the excitation of one of the boundaries indeed look ghost-like from the other boundary point of view. And this has very, very nice interpretation in terms of holographic dual as the thermal doubling of a quantum field theory. So this is something that you do in real-time thermal field theory if you want to calculate time-dependent processes in real-time thermal field theory. You, in some formalism, double your degrees of freedom. The double system has different spin statistic relations or different kinetic energy. In some sense, they're ghosts. And this maps very nicely to the physics of the eternal black hole. So in some sense, the fact that we find unconventional signature behind the horizon is not particularly surprising. This was seen before. Okay. So this brings about the suggestion, what would be the dual to the Lorentzian black hole? So there is a few indications that the dual to the black hole should include this kind of unconventional excitation to describe the physics behind the horizon. Okay, this vibes with other suggestions. The suggestion of SEN of large number of particle hole excitation is similar to that one, in the sense that the hole excitations are in this context are those ghost brains. The doubling in the eternal black hole, as I said before in the Penrose diagram, say that in some sense you have double the degrees of freedom in the full Lorentzian black hole. And the world volume theory and the deep brains includes those excitations more or less inevitably. So this suggests that the correct structure is based on this supergroup, and this is still a work in progress.